Jen Lindley Thomas.
So he's on the phone line. Daryl Ilbury, how's it, friend?
Friend is well. The friend is very well. The friend is relaxed, and it's, hey, you know, it's Cape Town. You can't get aggro about anything except for traffic.
Oh, it's so nice to have you on East Coast Radio. What an absolute treat. I wish it was under different circumstances, but wonderful nonetheless. So I hope you don't mind. I was going to start with the couple of words that I wrote earlier in the week after hearing that our very dear friend Johan van Bargen had passed away. And I wrote that, you know, as a six-year-old child, I used to listen to East Coast Radio on the way to school every morning, and hearing JVB and Daryl Ilbury, I can remember the seed of intention being silently sown. You know, I was always taken by the connection, imagination, play, and immediacy of radio, and loved hearing the joy and the banter. And when I got my foot into the door at East Coast Radio in 2004, you can imagine the surreal moment of meeting my creative gatekeepers. I mean, I worked with JVB every morning for a year while hosting the weekday breakfast show. And from the first day that I met him, it was a laugh a minute. I mean, he would arrive each and every morning, fresh, chipper, smelling like soap, armed with jokes and a cappuccino. And I always loved to see what T-shirt he would rock up wearing. And my best was this T-shirt that he wore with like a dog painting a wall. I can't explain it any better than that. And I loved sitting and hearing him, you know, tell me story after story of his life, his insight, and of course, how to keep safe on the road. And I smile fondly thinking of the time, you know, we used to do corporate team building activities together and would see us each arriving with a car full of hula hoops and orange road cones and balls. And our friendship from day one was that regardless of time would always remain the same. And I would grin when I got an out of the blue joke from him. I'll always remember the way his eyes smiled and crinkled in the corner, and how he used to shake his wrist to move his gold bracelet when telling a story. I mean, even seeing him last month in a fragile and very unwell state, I sat on the floor next to his chair and his attitude was still there, upbeat, brave, and in survival mode. Thank you for the time, JVB. Fly high, love always, Janie. Daryl Ilbury, once again, welcome to East Coast Radio. Now, you met the legend in 1986.
I know. How old were you in 1986?
I can't even do the maths. What was your first impression of him?
Well, it was an interesting event because it was, I had joined, well, it was then Radio Pointatel earlier that year, and I was doing the afternoon show. And towards the end of the year, they said, "Can we want you to do breakfast from the following year?" So I said, "Okay, cool." And so they had a little get together with the sort of core team of the breakfast show at that stage. And it was Johan, it was Ron Phillips who did racing, and it, of course it was Baron Stein who did surfing. So immediately when I entered into that environment, that core had already established themselves, and they were a team. They were a fascinating team. And the first time I met him, I distinctly remember I was struck by he was standing bolt upright. He was incredibly neat. He was always meticulously dressed, not a hair out of place. And, of course, you spoke about his eyes. He's got very piercing blue eyes. So he's a very sort of overbearing person when you first meet him. But then he smiled, shook my hand, a really firm grip, which for me is always a good indication of the character of someone. And from that moment on, we just absolutely connected because he's a very authoritative figure, but at the same time, he's a rebel. So he somehow manages to balance the both. And I immediately connected with him. And then that was the start of it.
I love the story you told me earlier in the week about how he kind of encouraged you to start smoking.
I know. Well, he smoked, I won't say John Player Special, obviously, you know, but he used to smoke JPS, which is a bit of a tea bag of a cigarette. But I mean, but he made it so cool. I mean, that was the strength of his character. If he was a Marvel comic character, he would be Mr. Cool. He can make anything look cool. So he did. So I remember one day we were at the cinema, and there was a cinema that was the ice rink now. I think Stow Ocean City, and I distinctly remember going there and ordering a box of JPS and coming back, and my girlfriend and I said, "You don't smoke, that's all I do now."
I want to be cool like that dude.
I want to be cool like him. Is that cool?
I love it. Now, Daryl, you guys did the breakfast show at East Coast Radio for 20 years, is that right?
Yeah, I worked out to be about 20 years. 20 years we worked together, yeah.
My gosh. What always stood out for me when listening was the fun and the fun and the games that happened on that show.
Yeah, it was. That was my job, was to provide basically the fun and the games. But I mean, what is interesting is that in a traditional breakfast show, you've got your key host or hosts, and then you have your maybe your sidekick, or you have your co-presenter, what have you, kind of thing. And then you have what's known as your service elements, who are your presenters for the news and what have you. And I thought it was such a coarse name. But for us, it was split the other way around. So that the news, the sport, the traffic, and the surfing were the key, the most important features of the show. My job was basically just to link in between them and just keep the energy going. And especially amongst those, the traffic was the singly most important, obviously, because lives depended on it. And so if we were going to do anything, because he and I were such good friends, we got on so well, and we teased each other, but what we had to make sure is that we never denigrated his authority. So that was easy, I mean, because he's Mr. Bulletproof. So we just said, all right, we built up the character of Mr. Bulletproof in everything that we actually did. So instead of normally what would happen is he would be the fall guy of anything, it would always kind of bounce back onto me. So I'd be the fall guy because you couldn't denigrate Mr. Bulletproof. And that was the key component to the success of the show.
So talk to us about what we're going to hear in this little audio clip.
I kept this because this is one of the rare occasions where he messes up. Because generally what we did is we would prepare for every link. A lot of people think we just go on and just talk rubbish. I know it sounds like that, but that's how good we were at pretending to talk rubbish. But every link was coordinated. It wasn't written down as scripted, but it was coordinated. And in this particular one, I said, okay. And he was describing something. I can't remember what it was. And I'm pretending to bash it out on the studio computer. You can hear it in the background. And we try to work out something. And then he was supposed to say something along the lines of, no, it's very, very vague, Vogue, but, and lead into Vogue by
okay.
Madonna.
Yeah.
And he messes it up.
Okay, here we go.
Two teams have got to have 2 points, and that would have made 4 points more than the four teams. That's the 4 points that the team would have got that they would have won.
No, just say that again. So I'm just...
All right, there are two teams that could have got 2 points, mm-hmm. which is together four points more than the team mm-hmm. that got through and that beat the team that only got 4 points.
Okay.
You know, you're right. Sorry.
It's clear, though. It's obviously easy to understand.
It's clear for you, but for me it's a little vogue.
Vogue.
The song is called Vogue. The whole thing was a big lead up to go into Vogue. Oh, you missed the whole thing up. I can't believe it.
I'm sitting here just grinning.
So I kept that. It's one of the few times that he missed it. There was I'll give you a perfect example of it. One day we had a restaurant bring us some sushi, and we couldn't talk about the restaurant, but I mean, it was nice to eat the sushi. And he said, no, he hates it. He hated the wasabi, you know, that very spicy green paste. So he set the whole thing up that he was to pretend that he's never had it before. So he'd point to the green stuff, and we would say, no, it's like a mint paste and whatever type of thing. And you pick it up, and you rub it on the inside of your nostril. So then obviously the listener's thinking, oh, my goodness, he's going to die kind of thing, you know. So we pretended that he did it, and he wipes it on the inside of his nostrils. And, of course, nothing happens because he's Mr. Bulletproof. So the whole joke bounces back, and we become the subject of the bounce of the joke. And he remains Mr. Bulletproof. It's those kind of things that we did every single day to develop his character because he was such a key character of the show.
We're paying a tribute to Johan van Bargen between now and 9 o'clock this morning, joined online from Cape Town with Darryl Ilbrey. What I wanted to ask you is, let's talk about how Johan was always able to make something like a traffic report so personal.
There's an art and there's a science to it. And I think what's important to bear in mind is that in all the years I worked with him, the most overwhelming thing that I got from him was a sense of duty, whether it's to his family, to his friends, to his colleagues, but very, very specifically to his listeners. And he understood the science of broadcasting and especially communicating in broadcasting, that it's not what you put out, but it's what the listener takes in. So instead of, and people who know traffic reports all the way around the country would know that traditionally you say, all right, there's a truck broken down here, there, whatever type of thing. Mm. He understood that when someone's driving, that they can't process all that data. So what he'd do is he'd invert the pyramid, as it were. So he would actually say, if you're traveling from on the N3 section, just past the petrol station on the left-hand side, whatever time, you'll find a truck broken down. Because he knew there's a big difference if a truck is broken down, if there's an accident, an impact. And instead of saying things like, take an alternative route, he'd say, try and take this. Because he knew it. I mean, he'd driven all over all those roads in Durban for 10 years as a senior policeman. So he knew every single back road. He knew those things like the back of his hand. But he was absolutely committed to the point that if we were had a gag running in the show and he came and he said, okay, if something serious has happened, we'd immediately stop absolutely everything. And we would make sure that we created the groundwork necessary for him to actually change the whole tone of the show and actually talk about something that was particularly serious.
What I also found so like intriguing about him touching on this is when you saw him compiling his traffic reports, he was so focused. And as you're saying, he was such an authoritative person because of the responsibility. But then he would be able to flip it over onto its head and then run with the coolest joke.
I know. That was him. That was him. You know, it's... I've worked with so many people in radio, and I hate to break them down into particular kind of personality types, but you get your anal types, you get your free flowers or what have you type of thing, but he could do absolutely everything. And all we would do is we would, like for example, he would come in, we're busy doing something, and we set it up, and I just have to say to him, okay, you're particularly upset about something that I've just done, but you're going to make everything better for me or what have you. That's all I had to say to him. And then he'd come down, and I'd sit down, and I'd start doing a link, and he'd say, what's wrong with you? I said, what's wrong? He said, well, yeah, something's clearly bugging you. And I said, well, this, and I'd talk about it. And then he'd come back with something. That's all he needed. He didn't need something scripted. He didn't need something. And he just had to know the tone of what we were doing and the brief narrative behind it. And he'd run with it, and he'd develop it, and he'd make it. And then I'd bounce off him, and the whole thing would get completely out of control. But in the end, we'd always bring it back. He was that good.
Mm. Are we going to be able to chat about him and his mankini between now and 9 o'clock?
No. Whatever happens to the beach is a central thing. Stay on the beach is a central thing.
I mean, we've been chatting to Daryl since 8 o'clock this morning. They met in 1986. They did a breakfast show for 20 years together. Fun and games always, but of course, Johan always having that sense of duty and taking his job extremely seriously. I mean, Dee, do you think that Johan, you know, knew the impact that he had?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was fully aware of it. He would have dealt with people all the time and they would have told him that. But there's a story I want to tell that explains the points of that out, but also shows how he connected with it. Is that in the early days of Radio Point Natal, we had a traffic helicopter and he would go up every morning. And I would have a button on the desk and I'd press the button and say, chopper one, whatever. And that's how we communicated. It was striking as strange. There's only one chopper in the air, but somehow he was chopper one. And now I think about 4 or 5 months after we started, and the station decided to send the chopper up because it was the start of the April holidays, to send it up in the evening. And he asked me if I wanted to go along. I said, fine, what have you. So we went and we were flying around and it was pretty cool. And then we were flying over, we were just hovering over Paradise Valley and it was getting quite dark. And he's looking down at the roads and they crossed over to him and he said, okay, it looks like it's getting dark now, so you know what to do, please switch those headlights on. And at that moment in time, I was looking down the N3 out towards the coast and he just saw everyone just switch their lights on. Mm. I tapped him on the shoulder off and said, did you see that? I said, everyone put their lights on. And he said, yeah, and he just nodded and said, yeah, he knew about it. And he kind of smiled and he said, yep, I know. And, I mean, that was when the radio, there was stations still at double-figure listenership, you know. Nowadays, of course, I mean, it's in its millions. And he knew that. He knew that anything that he said would have this multiplying effect on people's behavior. And he took that incredibly, incredibly seriously.
And it's so amazing because, I mean, even though he had the following that he did, he never... ever once in one, never in any which way, shape or form did he come across as arrogant or never. Entitled or better than you or a celebrity or even a personality. He was just such a humble soul.
Yeah, it's another reason I hated him. Yeah, because I mean, he was just remarkably good looking and talented and handsome and funny and whatever type of thing. And he was humble. You know, if he was overbearing, then you can actually sort of have a reason to be antagonistic towards him. But no, and everywhere I went, and I absolutely hated public appearances, because as you know, I'm a very shy kind of person. I hated them. And I knew that when I went there and someone would say, so how's the traffic guy, that I've actually done my job, because I deflected attention away from me towards him because he was the hero of the show.
We joined on the line by Daryl Ilbrey, who has been reflecting on the legend, Johan van Bargen, who passed away earlier in the week. So what was interesting as well, Dee, was when we've been chatting on and off this week, because I said to you, do you have a picture of me? Do you have a picture of yourself and Johan to send? I'd love to see one of you. And it was like, oh my gosh, this was all like pre-selfie.
That's right.
Hey, yeah. I mean, how mad is that?
We're that old, you know, we're that old. My great-grandkids, when they bounce on my knee, they say, yeah, Grandpappy, tell us about your radio days, you know, and I have to try and dig through the gray matter.
You're a legend, don't even. I mean, so much to say, not enough time, but if you had to sum it up, how do you think JVB, Johan van Bargen, the traffic guy, would like to have been remembered?
He would deflect attention away from himself. As we said, he was very, very humble, but he was very authoritative. He had this balance of the sense of duty and his rebelliousness. And I think he would be very, very happy and very content if he knew that there were people who, because they listened to his traffic reports, they managed to avoid a problem, and they managed to get to see their kids in the school play, so they didn't miss that. And there were human events in people's lives that were made possible because he guided them through dangerous traffic in the morning. Or if, because remember, he helped thousands of people through his company, Pro Driving Tactics, and advanced driving skills and that kind of thing. And if there are people who are still driving on the roads today, like, for example, both my kids went on to advanced driving course, his advanced driving course, and I know they've avoided possible accidents. And if he knew that there were thousands of people out there who had avoided possible accidents because of the skills that he actually gave them and taught them, then he'd sit back and he'd sit down and he'd have a can of Coke and he'd say, yep, I did good. I did good.
I mean, I just received an SMS here that says, hello, darling, listening to you, chatting to Daryl. Such beautiful memories hitting me really hard. Used to listen to Johan van Bargen. Even though we lived away 3 km from Ushaka, we'd always make sure we listened to the traffic guy in case there was congestion on our way to or from work. Big hugs. So, I mean, it's personal.
It is personal. It is very, very personal. And he when he spoke to people, whenever we went to any kind of function or what have you, he spoke to every single person. He treated them as an individual. And it's very easy in radar. I've seen so many people like that who think the focus is all on them. You know, they go, and I'm the celebrity kind of thing. And he was very much a celebrity, but he never ever thought that way. And one person would come to talk to him and speak directly to them one-to-one. For him, every listener was someone that he actually reached out and connected with. You know, he treated them as a friend that either they knew or a friend that he'd yet to meet. And I mean, that for me is one of the most remarkable things that he could actually do.
It's been such a joy spending time with you.
It's been such a joy. It's been very sad, and I'm glad it was you that told me about him when you passed. And thanks for keeping me in touch.
Always, my Angie. You know, I'm such a huge fan of you, and I have so much love in my heart for you. And I miss you.
Yeah, I'll miss him as well.
All right, my darling. Lots and lots of love. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, man.
Okay, Dee. Be well.
Jane Lindley Thomas, KZN's #1 hit music station, East Coast Radio.